me start with asking you, why are you here tonight? Why are you here tonight?
Will this work?
Well, let's see. Well, it's not working yet. Don't you love technology? Ah, okay, that looks a little better. That looks, okay, I can do that now. Okay, here we go. Question.
Why are you here tonight? Nothing else to do. March break, your son or daughter's upstairs, and you could be out shopping. So why are you here? Okay. Many reasons, probably. Many reasons. One of them may be, well, college and university. Is it a dream for some of us? Yes, let them go. Or is it a nightmare? I don't know, right? For both, perhaps. Okay, very true. Adolescent years, rapid, intense growth, physically, mentally, emotionally, your son or daughter. You're probably experiencing some of that as well. Students, they're seeking independence and identity. They want to go. They want to be independent. They want to go out of town, most of them, usually. And mom and dad says, no, stay in town. It's cheaper. Right? You know what I'm saying? But other than that, you know, parents, you want to guide and support your child. And it's very important. We want to learn how to be better parents. And probably that's why many of you are here. You want to learn how to be better parents to your son and to your daughter. And that's why this workshop for tonight, and that's the description of the workshop. So what I would like to do, spend the next less than half hour that I've got, talking about this workshop in three sections. One, question one, how well do you know your son or daughter? Important question, okay, as you try to support them. Two, what are the challenges of transitioning from adolescence into adulthood, from high school to campus life, to help support your child to live a life that will glorify God? You want them to remain in the faith above all else. Okay, that's key. And thirdly, how can you better support, understand, and encourage your child during these crucial campus years? Okay? That's what I would like to spend my time on. That was the description of the workshop, so I want to be faithful to what they told me I should talk about. Okay? So let's go. All right. Here's the goal. Right? Here's the goal. Enter campus and graduate in 4 to 6 years. Right? Think about that. Enter campus. Some of them aren't there yet. They haven't gotten their good news yet. Okay? But you want to enter and then graduate in 4 to 6 years. And then, here we now. What do we need to do to get there? From here to there. Okay? Straight line. What do we need to do? All right. Now, the parents, you need to celebrate this transition through these high school years. As I've saw those hands goes up, some of us have, you know, grade 7, grade 8 students, some grade 9, grade 10, some 11, grade 12. Some of you probably have some already gone through university. They're already on campus. All right? But as your adult starts to move toward mature adulthood right now, okay? So be prepared to change your parenting habits from caring for them, from command and control that you've cultivated over these last 17 or 18 years. Your relationship with your child is going to have to change. You're going to have to perhaps start to release them, learn how to release them as they become an adult, as you try to be more becoming a coach for them, rather than command and control. And at this point, you need to learn to release and let your child go. You have to trust God. Trust God, trust your son or daughter, and trust that he's made the right choice, and you've made the right choice, to send them off to post-secondary education, and they're going to start making their own decisions right now. Right? You have to trust them. Remember to pray for your child through their university and college experience. Prayer is very important. They're going to be challenged academically, socially, emotionally, physically, and especially spiritually as well. It's all part of the process of becoming an adult, right? You probably heard some of the statistics, the surveys that have been going on, that between 60 to 90% of all high school graduating students are going to never go back to the church once they graduate from high school. Once they graduate, they're gone from the church. And that's scary. And that's scary because the rate at which young people are leaving the church scares us. It scares us even more if it's your son or daughter or my son or daughter, right? And I'm sure everybody has heard personally of perhaps a young person throwing aside their faith, leaving their faith, and walking away from the church. It's devastating. It's devastating. So you need, and we need to remember that, parents, you are the primary link to God and their faith. Parents are. It's not the pastor, it's not the church. And in his book, Soul Searching by Christian Smith, a Christian writer and apologist, he says this: The most important social influence in shaping young people's religious lives is a religious life modeled and taught to them by their parents. By their parents. And when it comes to kids' faith, parents, you are the model to your kids. You are the model to your kids. I'm the model to my son. And that's important to know. Parents, you're painting a portrait of God for your child every day. Every word, every action, every conversation is a brush stroke on that canvas. And when your child is preparing now to leave home, they're staring at a portrait of God. What kind of portrait are we painting? And it shapes their actions and decisions about their faith as they see that picture being brushstroked day by day. Of course, there's exceptions. There's always exceptions. You know, we've all witnessed young people leaving Jesus, even though the faith of their parents was rock solid. It happened. And we see young people continue in university or college on fire for God, even though the faith of their parents were perhaps shaky or perhaps weak. But generally, parents play an enormous role in shaping the faith of their children. We have the responsibility. Parents, we have that responsibility. So how well do we know our sons and daughters, as I ask that? Now, remember your child is growing up. They will soon graduate, okay? How many here have grade 12 students right now? Some, praise God. How many have grade 11 and 10? Oh, longer. 9s, 8s. Younger than 7? Oh, praise God. How many are still kids? Oh, you're really starting early. Okay, but anyway, it doesn't matter. It's important to know. We're all here for a reason, all right? So they're growing up. How well do we really know them at this stage? Is your child that age? A lot of us have concerns. A lot of us, from their young kids, right? What are we going to do? How do I prepare my son to get there and graduate and do well, right? Now, think, write down, describe some key characteristics of your son or daughter on your handout. You don't have a handout. I have a handout for you. All right, I have a handout here. Everybody take one, pass it, all right? There's pens and paper at the back. Feel free to fill this out. Take one. Oh, thank you, great time. It's good to have helper. Take a handout. Because on that handout, I want you to think, write down, and describe some key characteristics of your own child. The one that you think is going to get to university and college this year, next year, whatever, okay? Physically, intellectually, socially, emotionally, spiritually. Take a few minutes. On your page, it looks like this. Fill it in as best you can. How well you know your son or daughter, all right? Physically, intellectually, socially, emotionally, spiritually. How well? Jot down your points, okay? Ladies are coming around with pens and paper if you need one. Raise your hand, someone will come to you. How well do you know your son or daughter in those areas? Characteristics. You don't have to show me afterwards, by the way. Okay? Characteristics in those areas. How well do you know your son or daughter? How would you describe it?
I don't know what to write. Physical means what?
Yeah. What's he like physically? You know, is he clumsy? Is he, you know, mentally? Is he smart, not smart? How well do you know him? You know, is he emotional? Socially, a lot of friends, not a lot of friends. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Certain characteristics. What have you observed, seen of your son or daughter as you describe them? You know what I mean? Each person is unique. Each person is special. Each person is in the image of God. All right? I can tell some of you are working diligently. Working very hard, trying to think. Some of you have got things filled up pretty good. Some of you, this is very hard. I don't know Pastor Ray what to write. I haven't thought about him or her in that way before. You know what I mean? Alright, now. This is just to see. Alright, now. Here's some characters of a typical high school student. Okay? This is what a typical high school student would look like. Physically, they're outward, growing, and awkward, right? They have an attractive grown-up appearance. Three, their appetite is usually good.
Very good.
They eat everything, right? Four, the physical habits are being formed. Five, they're usually concerned about their sexual nature, okay? Mentally, their reasoning powers are reaching new heights. They're thinking more, deeper, right? Two, they like argument and debate. They always debate why, okay? Three, they're very creative and idealistic. Four, their judgment is improving. Five, their imagination is usually under the control of reason and judgment. Six, they're usually subject to suggestion. Yeah, you can suggest and they'll go, okay? Socially, on the right side, one, they belong to a clique or exclusive social group. Friends are very important at this stage. Big deal, they need friends. Two, they're attracted to the opposite sex, although not always, okay, not always. Three, they're very much interested in outer appearances. Every time they pass the mirror, they look at their hair, right? Four, they always want social approval, right? Emotionally, their emotions are still intense. Two, they may now be moody, very moody. Sometimes up, sometimes down. Three, they want security. Four, they like excitement, okay? And excitement is really good, right? Okay? But spiritual, here's the key for us, all right? The religion is personal. The religion is one of action. They want to do things, all right? Three, the religion is emotional, sometimes very emotional, all right? And four, the doubts may increase about their faith. Okay, now this is important for us to understand. Do we know our own son or daughter? What are the characteristics? Okay, so that we understand where they are at this stage of their life. All right, now. I want to suggest seven things as we take a look at this question, as we go to the next part. Because I'll deal with question one, now it's question two. Was what are the challenges of transitioning from adolescent into adulthood from high school to campus life to help support your child to live a life that will glorify God? So if we know what our son or daughter is like, characteristic-wise, that gives us a better understanding to help them grow, help them stay with God, all right? Now, what challenges are there going to be on campus, do you think? Shout it out. What challenges are there going to be on campus? Do you know? Are you not sure? What do you think? What challenges do you think your son or daughter is going to face on campus? For those that are going to get there this September.
Academics.
We're paying. You better get good grades, son, daughter. Right? Academics. What else?
Decision making.
Make good decisions. Bad decisions can affect them for their entire lives. All right? Or bad decisions mean I don't eat this month. Right? What else?
Staying
with a good crowd. Peers is very important. Stay with a good crowd, good peer pressure, and that will support them throughout. A group of perhaps not so good friends, tear them down, bring them down, give them problems going forward. Okay, anything else?
Obsessive parents.
Oh, sorry.
Absence
of parents.
When things didn't go well.
When things don't go well, yeah.
Because they're used to our parents.
That's right. Mom and dad used to wake up son and daughter. No one's there to wake up anymore. No one's telling the kids to do the homework. No one's going to do the laundry. What are they going to do? They're going to call home every night? Bad idea. All right? There are some. Now, what I want to do, I want to show you a video clip. Okay? I'm going to watch this video clip for you. All right? The video clip is about 10 minutes. Cue it. Okay. Then I got to blow it up. Play it. Okay, here we go. 10 minutes. Watch this.
I love my youth group. It is awesome.
I started off with a very religious family. Didn't really get involved in youth group that much in high school.
I'm the oldest too, so I really even didn't know what college was like, and I didn't have any older friends.
It terrified me because I'd also heard statistics that 4 out of every 5 high school kids leave the church when they get to college, and that scared me.
Inside, I was panicking. I slept my mom. I just put her on a plane and sent her back to Atlanta, and here I am. And
I was valedictorian at my high school, and so came into college with these expectations that I was going to do very well, and didn't anticipate that I would end up struggling so much.
I didn't do too good. I ended up being on academic probation.
Well, at first my dad had given me a credit card that I was supposed to use just for emergencies. Well, everything ended up being an emergency. You know, I needed that pair of pants, Dad. I needed, you know, those shoes. It was an emergency. Everybody else had them.
I wanted to fit in. That's what it comes down to. I didn't know anyone. I was just trying to meet people in the dorms and kind of went to my first dorm party. There's tons of people going down the hall. Hey, we're going to this party. Come on, you want to go? You know, of course. You don't want to sit in your room by yourself. And I, like, never had alcohol before, and that I knew would be, like, the big thing. Like, okay, Catherine, you're cool, you're sure of yourself, you're not going to drink. And, like, the first weekend, people were shoving drinks in my face, and I was taking them, and I was like, oh, great, I'm not going to make it. Like, what is this? I can't even say no one time.
In fact, I drank so much that I don't remember half of my experiences.
And woke up the next morning and tied to a hospital bed, not knowing where I was. I drank so much that I could have maybe killed myself, and the doctors didn't know if I did any brain damage or any damage to my body with that amount of alcohol.
Eventually, in all of this mess, I was sexually assaulted. And that turns you down really deep. And you go, God, what am I doing? How did I get in this situation? How did I put myself here?
On the spiritual front, things are no better. 70% of 18 to 22-year-olds leave the church for a season or their entire lives. They leave the church just as they enter one of the most pivotal points in their lives, a period when they select careers, lifestyles, and often their spouse. My qualitative research concluded that there are three main reasons young people struggle both practically and spiritually in high school and in the transition to life on their own. Number one, the parent-adolescent relationship. Number two, the youth ministry culture. And third, the lack of preparation for the transition and responsibility of leaving home. Each of these factors stem from parents missing a vital transition from raising a child to developing an adult. These factors result in the failure we saw in the earlier video and the percentage of youth that leave the church.
A very good relationship with my dad, even though he's only 2 hours away. I literally have not spoken to him, and he doesn't know where I'm even living.
I'm excited because I'm finally moving out of my house and no parents are there, and I'm just really tired of my parents.
I've heard a lot of kids say, what my parents don't know won't hurt them. And it's such a cliche phrase because we really see it as the truth that, you know, the parents don't really know if this one drink won't hurt me. I hear people saying that all the time, or, you know, they don't know that I'm just going to experiment, and if they heard, they'd fly off the handle and never let me do anything social. I would actually say, ironically, I would say I'm one of the more conservative students in my group of friends, and my parents are some of the most lenient.
I would love to go up to them and tell them things that I've done without getting yelled at, but it seems every single time I go to them for anything, I get in trouble or something. Like, I remember I got in trouble twice for one thing because I went up and told them about it before it actually happened, before it actually came, the evidence came. So I got in trouble twice, and so from then on, I
had one of my great friends say to me, a worship leader actually, say to me, the art of deception has really made me get along with my parents.
Because when I get in trouble, it just makes me want to rebel even more.
Everyone there was living a double life, so during the service, sure, they'd seem on fire. But once you step out the door, as soon as it was over, they became the other person. They became the crowd.
That's so true at our school. The hypocrisy is crazy. It's through the roof.
It caused me to question my faith. Like, I question, are all Christians like this? Is this what being a Christian is, being fake? Like, going to church, pretending to worship, and then just going out and doing whatever you want?
And they almost brag about it, which is so interesting, that it's not even, they try and keep it hidden from their friends, but it's, you know, who's the worst Christian school student is suddenly the cool thing. And
I'm pretty sure people were brought to church and saw the dual life and wonder, how is this different than how I'm living? All they're doing is just going to a building and saying they're a Christian.
They're more interested in kind of how we bend the rules, and I feel a lot of pressure.
I'd rather be by myself where I wouldn't do anything than rather be with a group who's going to drag me down.
What's the college freshman dropout rate? 26%. Actually, that's right. So 1, 2, 3, 4. Sorry, you're gone. 5, 6, 7, 8. Boom. No offense. You're out of here.
I would stay up till 2, 3 in the morning. I even slept through one of my big midterms.
The fact is, the majority of those students who drop out at that rate have not done anything at all. My research says to prepare.
I really didn't have a game plan going into college. I didn't expect what is this going to be. I just knew, all right, there's going to be lots of parties, and people say it's going to be hard.
I hadn't really taken into consideration the amount, like the cost of staying on a college campus.
Mommy and Daddy are gone, and so I can do whatever I want, especially the sheltered ones, I've noticed, especially at a Christian college or even secular too. All the sheltered ones are free now, and so they just go crazy.
As a parent, I was deeply challenged when I stopped and truly listened to young people. I found that much of what they had to say made sense. The reasons I thought young people struggled were not as big a factor as my own inability to transition from raising a child to developing an adult, because major changes take place in the adolescent brain 18 months prior to puberty. The time I spent with young people made it clear to me that I had misunderstood the true nature of influence. I found that influence, rather than being demanded by a well-meaning parent like me, is actually granted to parents by their adolescents. During the research, the young people that really impressed me in terms of the quality of their lives and the strength of their faith were far and few between. But these amazing young people had one thing in common. I found that they had very different relationships with their parents. When I took what I learned from these relationships back to Scripture, I was surprised, uplifted, and challenged in my studies. Even more challenging was actually talking to my own adolescents and discovering that my approach was not truly working. It just appeared to be working on the surface. Changing my approach has yielded amazing results in my young people's lives. In fact, many of their friends frequently say things like, "Why can't my parents be like yours?" As a result of what we have learned through this study, my adolescents now have positive peer pressure to follow us because of what their friends say. The good news is that this can be you and your family. We have seen many parents make these changes with similar results. When adolescents grant their parents the influence in their lives, parents no longer need to fear the outside influences. Today we have become so concerned with our kids' immediate success, we have lost sight of the future and what young people need to be ready to handle when they leave home. Our young people need to be self-managing on every front if they are going to transition well. If we manage their lives for them through our ability to control external motivation tactics or nagging, will they truly be ready to handle all the decisions, priorities, and responsibilities when they leave our homes and head to college, career, or the military? The Secrets of Influential Parenting series will be...
Okay. Yeah, so can I have the lights, please? Someone help with those lights. So I want to suggest 7 things that youth need from their parents. 7 things in your handout that they won't abandon or leave God as they transition to university and college. The first thing is that youth need parents. to stop handling their faith off to youth leaders and pastors. Now, some parents look to the pastor or youth leader as the primary person responsible for the spiritual growth of their sons and daughters. So why is this alarming? Well, it's because the Bible makes no mention of this. Many of you, I'm sure, have read Deuteronomy 6, verses 1 to 9. And it says, "These are the commands, decrees, and laws the Lord your God directed me to teach you, to observe in the land that you are crossing the Jordan to possess, so that your children and your children after them may fear the Lord your God, as long as you live by keeping all his decrees and commands that I give you, and so that you may enjoy long life. Hear, O Israel, and be careful to obey, so that it may go well with you, and that you may increase greatly in a land flowing with milk and honey, just as the Lord the God, your God, the ancestors, promised you." And it goes on. "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength. These commandments that I give you today are to be on your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads. Write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates." So parents have the primary responsibility of raising the children in the ways of the Lord. Youth leaders and pastors, we exist to equip you, support you, help you, supplement the work you are doing in the home. We don't exist to replace you, the parents. Parents matter. Parents matter. That's the first point. The second point is this. Youth need parents to care as much about their struggles as parents do about their salvation. You know, you probably had numerous conversations with your son or daughter about getting baptized or about their faith as well, and why they need to get baptized. It's an important step for them. It's the first step of obedience as they become a follower of God. But youth also need someone to care as much about their struggles as parents emphasize about salvation and their faith. See, many youth today are struggling in high school, searching for their identity. Who am I? Struggling with lust, pornography, and searching for direction in life. They're not sure. Parents, we need to reach out to them, talk to them, ask them what's going on, and show the love of God to them. And this starts by helping them see that their present struggles is God's concerns too. Sit down with your children, talk to them, show them grace, and listen to their stories, their struggles, and what they're facing in life. It's a tough world out there for them. And as you do this, the gospel becomes alive, real to them. And once your children see that God walks with them through the struggles that they are in, they will have a stronger desire to give their lives to God, to Christ, as we seek to strengthen their faith as well. Let me show you another video. This particular video is called Listen.
Listen. You want to know how to do it?
Don't ask.
Seriously, don't ask if you're not ready to listen.
Don't say how you do it.
I'll just say fine.
Fine is the answer I'm trained to give.
Why then just you're not?
A shallow answer.
I'm sorry.
A shallow answer to a shallow question. Most people don't really want to know.
They assume I know, they're just being polite.
I don't think that's polite at all. If that's not the case?
If that's not the case, forgive me.
Forgive
me.
But you can see how I might think that, can't you?
Short questions get short answers.
Want to know how I'm doing?
Ask what I've been up to, what I'm working on.
Ask me about my family.
If you're asking me.
If you're asking me.
Am I sensitive to your word?
Most of the best questions.
Most of the best questions don't have question marks.
I'd like to hear about your job.
Tell me how you felt. Tell me what you mean. I'd like to know more about that.
You want to know how I feel when you ask questions that way? I feel like I belong.
I feel included.
I feel cared for.
Please. If you already know the answer, it's not really a question, is it? It's a test.
Please don't do that to me. Don't make me look foolish.
Don't use me to make a point. If you're serious, ask what I think. Ask how I feel.
Ask how I feel.
And wait for my honest answer.
Learn from silence.
If I don't answer right away.
If the silence goes on too long.
Maybe I'm embarrassed.
Maybe I didn't understand the question.
Maybe you weren't clear. Maybe I'm thinking.
Wouldn't that be nice?
You want to know how I'm doing? Sometimes I'm sad because life is confusing.
And painful.
We both know there's nothing you can do to fix that.
It's okay.
It's okay. I'll be fine. Truly.
That doesn't mean I don't want you to
check. That doesn't mean I don't want you to check. Give me a chance to tell you when I'm fine.
And maybe I'll tell you when I'm not. Jen, take my first response at face value.
Listen with your eyes.
Do I look like I'm doing all right? Listen with your heart.
Do you believe my answer?
The very best, but sometimes with the worst.
I'm capable of every kind of listening.
Just like you.
Just like you.
Don't ask me to do what you want.
If you want to know my story.
If you want to know my story, tell me yours.
Tell me yours. Let me know I'm safe.
Let me know you're not perfect.
When
either.
I believe that.
When I believe that.
I'll talk to her.
Do you hear what I'm saying?
So, do you hear what they're saying? Right? They want to hear and want you to ask. And it's important that we do ask. All right. Third thing, youth need parents to answer the questions they are asking. Today's culture and society is extremely complicated and complex, isn't it? Young people see and read everything. Media is at their fingertips. Information, both good and bad, are available on demand. They can get it on their cell phone, anywhere. And as young people battle with difficult questions about sexuality, about social issues, among other things, the world around them is forming their perspective and their worldview. What's the world look like? Every article, every conversation, every video is sending a message to your son or daughter about what life is like and how they should respond. And it's important, more than ever, for parents like us to open up space, to give them space, to talk to them, discuss difficult topics with them. It's time to stop turning a blind eye to some of these issues and the lives of our young people. We need to talk to them about some of these issues. Most youth never had a conversation with any adult about sex growing up. Nothing about lust, nothing about God's design for purity, or even about alcohol. Think about when you were growing up. Did you ever have such conversations with your moms and dads? Probably not, right? I didn't, right? But today, it's important that we try. That we try. Unless we create space for these kids to answer some of these hard questions, youth will turn to other media sources or their friends for answers. And the church and the fellowship can provide some of this teaching as well. We can help. But it's important that parents also talk about these things to help them, to reinforce it, or at least let them know that you are also struggling with these same questions. We don't know, son. We're not sure either. But can we try to find out the answer together? Together. All right. Now, fourth, youth need parents to stop protecting them. All right? The world is broken. Boy, you look around the world, it's kind of broken when you think about it. Also seems our world is more sinful than ever, doesn't it? With ISIS, terrorism, Donald Trump, on the other hand, we don't know what's going on in this world, right? And the world today is nowhere like the world during Jesus' time. Do you agree with that? Do you agree with that? But consider the sinful cities of Ephesus and Corinth back then. During the time of Paul, Ephesus was overtaken by witchcraft. Scary. Witchcraft. Every spring, roughly 1 million people traveled to the temple of Artemis, which was filled with prostitutes. Let's just say those people weren't hanging around just asking and talking about the weather, right? So how does Paul instruct Ephesus and the Ephesians there to respond in the midst of a culture blanketed with so much sin? What does Paul tell them to do? Well, he tells them to put on the armor of God. Ephesians 6, 10 to 20. It says, "Finally, be strong in the Lord and in his mighty power. Put on the full armor of God so that you can take on your stand against the devil's schemes. For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms." And he goes on. He says, "Therefore, put on the full armor of God, so that when the day of evil comes, you may be able to stand your ground, and after you've done everything, to stand. Stand firm then with the belt of truth buckled around your waist, with the breastplate of righteousness in place, and with your feet fitted with the readiness that comes from the gospel of peace. In addition to all this, take up the shield of faith with which you can extinguish all the flaming arrows of the evil one. Take the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit, which is the word of God." He continues and says, and pray in the Spirit on all occasions with all kinds of prayers and requests. And with this in mind, be alert and always keep on praying for all the Lord's people. Pray also for me that whenever I speak, words may be given me so that I will fearlessly make known the mystery of the gospel, for which I am an ambassador in chains. pray that I may declare fearlessly as I should. Paul's talking to the Ephesians here. In other words, jump in the fight. Get in there, right? Paul expects the Christians in Ephesus to engage the culture, not run from it. And as a parent, our goal should not be to teach our kids to run, to flee from evil. Well, that is a very good plan at times. You have to know when to run, when to fight, all right? But our goal should be to show them how to engage the culture, engage sin, and fight against it for the glory of God. And this is something we have to do and teach our young people to do as well. Fifth, youth need to see God as more than rules and church attendance, right? You know, every decision, every thought, and every action comes down to this. In whom do I or my child place their trust? Think about it. In whom do I or my son or daughter place their trust? Youth need to see that parents trust the promises of God. Youth need to see that parents make decisions as though God was real and alive. Not a set of rules, not a set of do's and don'ts, but more importantly, why we do what we do. Do you know why you do what you do? Do your children know why you do what you do? Parents, especially fathers now, never underestimate the impact of your decisions for your children. They need to see that you trust God with your time, with your money. They need to see you approach your job and career as a mission field. They need to see you love all people. They need to see you trust the promises of God in Scripture. And children, our children need to see us walk the talk. Do they see us walk the talk? Do you say what you do? Do you do what you say? Kids are very smart. They know. They see. They watch us like a hawk. And because of that, they can tell, does mom and dad really believe what they tell me? You know what I'm saying? All right. So if you boil down Christian living down to just church attendance and just doing the right thing or doing the expected thing, the children will notice that. Who wants to follow a God who's nothing more than rules and coming to a church building just to attend service? There's more to that. There's more to life. And there's more to Christ and living for Him as well. Sixth, youth need to see parents' struggles and doubts. Right? Remember that the apostles had doubts and behaved badly at times. Some of them did. Some of them wanted to be kings themselves. Parents, your kids have doubts too. And they need to see that you have doubts. We have doubts. I have doubts. We all have doubts at times. Otherwise, when questions about God come, your kids will either internalize them, keep them inside, don't share, because it's not the right thing to do, all right? Or they're going to go somewhere else for their answers. Both options are not very good options when you think about it. There's power in being vulnerable and authentic and real. Your kids need to know that you are human. We're all human. We make mistakes. We sin. We fall down. We get angry. We need to ask forgiveness. We need to say, sorry. Will you forgive me? Those are tough words to say, but our kids need to hear that from us when we are wrong, when we are true. All right? And they need to know the path to intimacy with God involves seasons of doubt and struggle. We have seasons of doubt and struggle, and they need to see that so that faith becomes real to them. Seven, youth need parents to pray that God build and sustain their faith. Youth need to see parents plead that God build and sustain their faith. You know, parents, in the journey to lay a foundation of faith for your children, nothing is more important than prayer. Do you believe that? Nothing is more important than prayer. Pray for your children. Pray with your children. Pray every day. Never stop praying for them, for your kids. Even if your child is light years away from God or has turned away from God, God is only a prayer away. One prayer can change everything. And parents, you're painting a portrait of God for your son and daughter. And what does that picture look like today? It's never too late to invest in the faith of your children. God doesn't work like money. The outcome of your kid's faith isn't necessarily determined by the time you put into it. It also is never too early. It's never too early to get started. The church and pastors play a role of faith in your children, but the primary responsibility is parents. You and I, we have that responsibility. And God would never give you a task and not equip you for it. Your children don't need the funniest, the most knowledgeable, or the best communicator to help build their faith. They need you, parents. They need me. They need each of us to do our part. Watch this video that I've got for you about parenting issues.
What are the kind of questions you ask, even from young age to older? You know, what are the kind of questions to help our kids, you know, prepare for life after high school?
You know, I think it first starts with a framing, and we're dealing with this right now with our two teenagers, our 14 and 13-year-old. And that is that we're not looking at you getting being average. We're not looking at you meeting the minimum of a C grade. We're not looking at you graduating from high school. We're actually interested in you getting a college degree for the purpose of opening up the opportunities. Not necessarily because we have this great plan or path for you to become a doctor or a lawyer or a dentist or whatever, but statistics and studies show that a college degree presents a much greater opportunities for your children than if you don't have a college degree. Now, that's not to say that Bill Gates and Steve Jobs and Mark Zuckerberg didn't do really well as dropouts.
Right.
But the statistics show college is really important, and it's a formative time of your life.
Well, you know, our mutual friend John Wallace, who's the president of
ADU,
told me that if you graduate from college, and it's not about money, like you say, but you will make over $1.2 million more. But again, it's not just about the money, because I would say Gates is probably doing just fine without a college degree.
Right.
It's really about the relationships and building character. You know, I say that what we're looking for in parenting is we're trying to raise responsible adults, and I would add who love God.
Right.
And if that's the case, then the college experience is a part of that building character issue. I don't believe every kid should go to a Christian college. I know you and I both are involved in a Christian college, but that's not the case. And I think you agree with me. But, you know, you've got community college. You've got tech schools. You've got a Christian college, which today, frankly, for a lot of people is expensive.
It's very
you've
expensive.
Got public education here in the United States, here in California, I should say, where we live. You know, you've got the University of California system and the state system. And, you know, we have our problems here in California, but those are some pretty phenomenal schools, too.
Right.
However, there's this, you know, plethora of opportunities. How do you begin looking at all of these to decide, so where is, where's your kids? Where are they going to end up?
I think it first starts with an understanding that college is a privilege and an opportunity that everybody can achieve or go to. And that persistence is really important. Sometimes I think we, as parents, put our hearts or minds set on a specific college. And not to pick on the one down the road, but Stanford's an amazing place. Not every child's going to get into Stanford. So early on in the process, and I believe that it's during their, you know, really their freshman, sophomore years, starting to talk about college. Not necessarily that you're going to identify where or what they're going to go to, but again, helping them reset their mind that it's not just about graduating from high school, but that high school is preparing them for college.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting you say that because some parents, you know, by the time their kids are in first grade, are saying you need to take a French class because it's going to help you get to, you mentioned Stanford or Harvard or Princeton or whatever. And, you know, when I was doing grad work at Princeton, I was helping counsel freshmen. And some of these freshmen were the biggest burnouts because their parents, too young, had pushed them into not having a life because of the incredible pressure. It seems like there's a balance between, helping kids prepare for college and not pushing them so hard that they burn out.
I think that it's important that we know our children. I would have done better to take a year off and then go to college.
Yeah.
I went to the University of Colorado and I was in aerospace engineering. I thought I was going to be I thought I was going to be an astronaut.
Instead of being my boss.
Yeah. And frankly, it was the worst semester of my life.
Right.
I failed out.
Yeah.
I realized that I wasn't capable of what I think probably were unrealistic expectations. And it took me 2 years to get back into Azusa Civic is where I ended up going.
Right.
But when I went back to APU, I had a different framework because I had been working, and I'd watched really smart people do things that I didn't want to do for my life,
right.
That I wanted to use my brain and that I wanted to do something. Yeah. And so when I got back, I owned it at a different level.
Yeah.
And that was the transition for me.
What are the kind of questions you ask, even from young age to older? You know, what are the kind of questions to help?
Okay, hope that was helpful. Now, what that really leads us into is, you know, remember, what do we need to remember? Well, we need to remember that, you know, many parents fear, right, are afraid, child's university and college transition. They wonder, will my son or daughter make it? It's totally understandable. It's real. And the dangers are real as well. You know, teens are going to be, you know, tested spiritually, morally, academically, financially, relationally, and the good news is God is faithful, and He sustains His children. He'll sustain each and every one of us. He longs for our holiness. God wants our holiness, and He wants it more than even we do. But thriving on campus is really possible. Those with godly character, those who embrace responsibility, take initiative, know their weaknesses, pursue excellence, and begin their campus journey with at least some kind and level of academic ability and interest, do just fine on campus. Yet problems arise when one or more of these key characteristics are missing and disciplines are missing, and that's what causes and trips them up. While preparation during these high school years is crucial, even if you're a bit late in the game, the good news is that it's never too late to start and do better. We see students change majors and take off, just like that video where he said he took 2 years to find his real soft spot, where he could grow like a rocket because they finally found their calling and their vocation. Sometimes we sign up for the wrong program, the wrong degree. And until we find what we're really good at, we don't do well. And we even see perhaps some, I would call, undisciplined and unmotivated first-year students become mature, responsible senior students once they find their passion, they find their gifts, and become intentionally motivated. They do it because they want to, not because they have to. Big difference. So, question 3, third part of our workshop tonight, okay? How can you better support and understand and encourage your child during these crucial campus years, okay, as you move forward? Well, first thing, love them enough to set reasonable expectations that challenge and give them a vision of Christian excellence. I say reasonable because there's a lot of stress on our young people today. And they don't need mom and dad giving them more of it as well. Okay? So reasonable expectations. You know, live fruitfully for God's glory and in using their God-given gifts and talents. Let them know that no matter what happens, no matter what happens, son or daughter, I love you. And you can always come home. They need to know that. They need to know that. Secondly, find that delicate balance between protecting them from major harm, yet allowing them to stumble so that they can learn from their mistakes and poor decisions. The time to do that is in high school, 9, 10, 11, even part of 12. Let them fall, let them stumble. You're still here. You can catch them. When they're off the university, you can't really catch them. Hopefully they have developed enough maturity and wisdom to make wise decisions at that point. 3, encourage them regularly, but also help them accurately recognize their weaknesses. We're not perfect. Nobody's perfect, right? We all have areas of weaknesses that we need to know, and we need to help support each other. And sometimes we're blindsided. We don't see where we're weak. So we need to trust people around us to tell us areas that we may be weak and areas we don't see, all right? Lastly, live what we preach. Live what we preach. Pursue Christian responsibility and excellence in our own lives. Apologize when we fall short. Be transparent and authentic with them. Listen to them. Let them know you love them and will always pray for them. Walk the talk. Okay? They need to see that in you. They need to see that in the world. Okay? And that develops their trust in others as well. See, God has great plans for your children. May that journey be a blessing for all. And that's the idea. Now, timeline for university and college. Some of you may already know this timeline, but I wanted to tell you that as well. May 27th, this year, is the latest date Ontario University will respond to applicants. They will hear by then whether to offer them a position at campus, refuse their application, or tell them, wait, Because some may not hear until June or July. That's really late. But some will have to wait. June 1st is the earliest state students to respond to an Ontario University offer of admission. They got to tell them, I accept, I don't accept. Okay? So that they can free up spots if that's the case. July 14th, target date to transmit final grades to university in case there's a need for those final grades. Early June and August is when they can tell, when you can check if other universities have open spots available at their campus. You need to know this if your son or daughter doesn't have a spot yet. You need to know where to apply if there's openings someplace else. Okay? And September, pack your bags, get ready, move in. Okay? That's where your son and daughter. I have a video I want to show you, tips for parents of university from the University of Waterloo.
My name is Courtney Gray, and I'm the coordinator of Parent and Family Experience at the University of Waterloo. Your student is going through a confusing time as they start their university career. They're anxious about what's to come, but excited about this new adventure. Not to worry, we have some tips to help you through their first year at Waterloo. Our first tip is to make a communication plan with your student. Think about how often you'll communicate with them, who will make the contact, and how you'll do it. Every family is different, and how you decide to go about this will be up to you. A great tool to use is Skype. You can make a Skype date with your student every so often, and then you'll always be in contact with them and know how they're doing. Our second tip is to make a plan for the first visit home. This should ideally be after the first 6 weeks on campus. The reason for this is that students will have time to feel more connected to their new environment when they spend more time at school. Our third tip is for students to unpack their residence room mostly on their own. The reason for this is that when students can decide where they put their belongings, it helps them connect to their new environment and it makes it feel like theirs. This can help combat homesickness later. Our fourth tip is for you to check in with your student after the first 48 hours of them being in their residence. The reason for this is that after the first 48 hours, they're likely feeling that they would like to talk to someone at home and have a connection. They haven't yet made any strong relationships on campus, and knowing someone misses them at home will make them feel cared about. Our fifth tip is to avoid asking if your student is homesick. This can sometimes be a self-fulfilling prophecy. What you can do is in every communication you have with your student, fill them in on what's going on at home, what renovations are happening, how are family members doing, and how is the family pet. Students don't like to come home and feel like the house has changed and they weren't aware of it. With all these changes, you'll be expected to become a coach to your student. The university views your student as an adult when they come on campus, and the university will want to deal directly with them. We know that as a family, you're used to doing things together, and sometimes you're able to help your students with these things. But now we want you to coach your students through these processes. It's a catch-22. We want you to step back, but also stay involved. As their coach, you can help them do a number of things. Encourage them to take action on campus when they have a problem, and encourage them to find options and different solutions to their problems. You can help them brainstorm these. Also encourage your students to try new things. We have a variety of different clubs and societies on campus that they can explore their individuality with. Don't be surprised if your student comes home and decides that they don't want to study in the program they originally studied in. This is common for many students as they have their own self-discovery. Encourage your student to reflect on the costs and benefits of their decisions and help them come to the answers to their problem. There are many resources for you to use to help your student while they're on campus. We recommend the book Letting Go by Colburn and Trieger. You can find this in the Waterloo bookstore. You can also visit the University of Waterloo website or direct your student to the Student Success Office.
Lights, please. All right, now. Hopefully that was helpful. All right? Sometimes it's good to hear from what the university tells us. All right, now. There's something else that's going on as well, just to let you know. There's a one-day seminar that's taking place. Did I miss something? Nope, I did. Okay. One-day seminar called Transition 101, which is going to take place on May 28th. I've got flyers here for people if you want one. Can someone help me pass this out to each person? They can take one flyer each.
Sure, when I
get some. This is a one-day seminar for parent and graduate and grade 12 students that's put together by InterVarsity Fellowship, Power Change, AFC, Canadian Baptist of Ontario to connect graduating high school students going to college or university. It's a one-day event held at Knox Presbyterian Church downtown on Saturday, May 28th from 8:30 to 3 p.m. for all grade 12 graduates to come together with their youth groups if possible and meet students who will likely be in the same campus. The speakers will involve Dr. Dave Overholt, who's the he's from Church on the Rock, and John Latta, along with others as well. If you think this is something that you want to go attend with your son or daughter, feel free to sign up, take that card, check the website, and find out about that as well. Okay? That's the one thing. So this is not the only night. There's other things going on to help graduating students connect with their campus or find out more stuff. Okay? It is $20 per person for the students. All right. Frosh Connection, which is also an AFC endeavor. The ANC has Frosh Connection. It's an annual event hosted by AFC and Asian Chinese Christian Fellowships across Ontario. FX, what they call, allows first-year students from the GTA churches to meet other first-years in one location, as well as older brothers and sisters from their respective universities and colleges. And usually, last year they had it on the last Tuesday of July at North York Chinese Baptist Church at 5 p.m. Okay? So the graduating students are free. Everybody else is $5. It's a barbecue. It's an opportunity to meet CCF members from other campuses, connect with them so they have a name or face that they connect with. It's also they also provide, I think, workshops for parents as well. So you can go to the AFC website and check up on this. So that, again, that's another place where your graduating grade 12 student can connect with other people from the campuses where they're going in case they need to talk more and get to know some other leaders as well. Sometimes a face, a name, helps them connect with the Christian ministry when they get on campus. And that's crucial connection once they get on campus. One thing we've learned, if your son or daughter does not connect with a Christian fellowship, youth group, campus crusade, intervarsity, navigators, or something within the first month or two, they drift. They don't go to church. They just stay in their room. That's not good. You know what I'm saying? They need to get a good peer group. A peer group is a Christian community where they can be accountable, have Bible study, have fellowship, do things together, and have a positive influence in what they do going forward. The more they get into bad habits, the more they will drift away from the Lord. The more they'll drift from going to church. The more they'll drift from that Christian community will keep them accountable. Okay? So that's important to think about. All right? On your handout, I've given you some website and some media links that will be helpful if you need to read up or find some information. Ontario University Application Center, Government of Canada website, how to study and succeed in university, university rankings, post-secondary student life, a guide for parents to help their teens explore career options. The sixth one, 8 things every student should know about university life. Okay. After that, the first year, how to support a student, that's for parents. 2, preparing for post-secondary environment. 3, Ontario Prospects Career Planning Guide for Students. 4, this is from Fuller Institute. They've got a great website that gives some Christian information from Fuller that's very helpful. 5, a College Transition Institute. 6, the University U from a Christian perspective. Okay, so hopefully those things will be helpful to you as you have some links that you need to find out. You don't know where to go. Well, go there. Okay. Last thought. My time's coming up. Okay. We need to remember not to seek perfection as a standard in our own lives or the lives of our children. We are not perfect. We cannot expect our sons and daughters to be perfect as well. All right. 2, the gospel says we are all wrong, sinful, and messed up, but we're all dearly loved by God. And do we live that way day by day? And do our children see us living that way day by day? In Christ, we are all in process, and often a painful process of being changed from the inside out. We're being changed. We're not perfect. Our sons and daughters are in the same way, right? And they're even younger than us, so we should give them more time. Look at us. See how long it took us. You know what I'm saying? Anyway, the campus journey and transition is part of that process for your son and daughter. So let's help them, guide them, love them, and care for them as well. All right? Now, I have one last video. Again, it's from the University of Waterloo, Parent and Family Transition. Sometimes it's important to hear words of encouragement from other parents.
Hi, I'm Sheila, and my son Ashwin studies at the University of Waterloo in the Engineering Department. Firstly, I've realized that parents all over the world are the same. Whether you're from Canada or India, we go through the same thing. Student Life 101 is an overnight program designed to help students transition from high school to university the most important thing that we took away was knowing that our daughter would have a support system as she moved through her first year of being away from home.
The most important thing I learned is to find that sweet spot, whether to hold my daughter back or release her to be herself.
It was an adjustment not talking to Emily on a daily basis. When she would call home, we would find that we would try to listen to her more and let her do the talking. I learned to use the 6-week transition milestone, and I was watchful about tone and frequency and the duration of the contact that I had with my son. I think my role has changed from being an active supervisor to a more of a support giver, and we trust his better judgment, and he knows that we're always there in case he needs us. During midterms, Remley called home upset because she had not done as well as she'd hoped on one of her exams. We thought back to Student Life 101, and we were told of the resources that were available to students on campus. By the end of our conversation, Remley had a plan to move forward for the rest of her term. I learned about the support offered by the university from the website of the Student Success Office, as well as the YouTube videos that we could go through called Experience Waterloo. Attending Student Life 101 helped relieve some of the anxiety for both Remily and for us as parents.
The University of Waterloo provides all the resources that the parents need.
She was smiling from ear to ear, and you could just tell she was loving it. And I just felt comfortable. I knew she was going to be okay.
The Student Success Office has lots of services to help you support your students throughout their first year. Our website has information about parent and family events, registration for the Parent and Family e-newsletter, access to our video information series, and other resources to help you support your students.
That's very good. Okay, so hopefully that was helpful. Now, whoops. So remember that graduation from high school is about beginning, not ending. The journey begins. So hopefully you appreciate that, enjoy it, and that your son and daughter will also enjoy that journey as well. All right? Questions? I've said a lot. Any questions? Anybody have? You don't have any questions? I'll ask you a question. Sure.
Level parents told that they have problems with you as a kid where they start closing the door and doing things inside their room and don't want the parents to get in and see what they are doing.
Mm-hmm.
How would you advise the parents to approach that problem?
Okay, just so that everybody hears the question. The question is, some parents were saying that their son or daughter is inside the room, closed, doing stuff that they don't know what they're doing. And so what would you suggest for them? Okay. What do the parents think they're doing inside the room?
Yeah, they don't know anything. They seem to be pushed out to go into the world of the kids.
Mm.
They don't want the parents to see what they are doing.
Okay.
What kind of maybe they're not doing anything wrong.
Right.
But they just come to a point where they don't want to share anything.
Mm.
They want to close the world around them.
Okay.
And go to friends inside in.
Okay.
So
I would start by saying, you know, do you have meals together? Do you talk during meals? Do you communicate about struggles? Do you talk about school as they come home from school? Is there a good relationship with them, or does that relationship needs to be built up a bit more? Perhaps there's some things that are going on that young person is struggling with and may not be comfortable in sharing that with mom and dad right now. Don't know. Are they being bullied at school that they don't want to share about? Don't know. A lot of things could be. So just by that question itself, I would ask the question, well, how are you getting along with your son or daughter? Do they pray together, depending on where they are in their faith? Do they have perhaps another adult who may be able to communicate and talk with them and build that bridge between mom and dad if they can't? Is there other adults who could come into that scene? Another uncle, perhaps, someone who would be more able to communicate or to share or to be more open with that or start that process? Or if nothing else, mom and dad, maybe just let your son and daughter know how you're feeling. Son and daughter, I don't know what's going on, but I'm concerned. Could you tell me? Could you help me understand? I want to pray for you. What can I pray for you if you're struggling with something? You don't have to tell me, but the most important thing that their son and daughter need to know is that they're loved. And that's the beginning point. Mom and Dad, if you love me, perhaps I can tell you a bit, but not a lot. But if there's not that communication there yet, perhaps they need to spend some time in thinking how to move there. You can't go from here to there, but what's the first small step to help them along that road? Any other parents would like to suggest something? Perhaps you've experienced that yourself, or perhaps you have seen that, then how have you handled it, or others have handled it as well? Any thoughts?
I took my son for a walk and, spending that one-on-one time with him helped him to open up to me with his struggles and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff that he wouldn't talk about in the confines of the home.
Right.
And stuff like that. So, but it took a while to figure out what that soft spot was to
right.
get to
yeah.
him up.
Yeah. Guys are very particular.
Yeah.
If you sit them down and look at them, they're not talking. No way. But if you take them for a walk, you take them for a drink, for something that they're doing, or you go build something together, then during those quiet times that you're doing something, he will open up. Okay? Slowly, but it takes time. Guys do not like to sit and be stared at, in particular. Okay? So you got to find what works with your son or daughter. That's where knowing your son and daughter, characteristic-wise, what makes them tick, what makes them open up, and what closes them, sort of thing. Okay. And sometimes moms can sense that more, because mom is usually there more with son and daughter, and they can provide some ideas. And dad, sometimes you need to ask mom, what do you think, what should I do? So sometimes it depends on who has that stronger relationship to do that. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Anybody else? Sure. Good, bad, not so good. Now, I will say video games is a big problem for most people because of all the media, all the electronics that's going on around there as well. The thing is that, like anything else, video games is a tool, but it also can provide some enjoyment as well. The problem is it can help them in their learning using the proper way. But video games can be very destructive if it controls them versus them controlling and being willing to be self-disciplined. That's the problem. So once you get down that road, you got to find out what is causing the son or daughter to be so enticed, attracted, allured, grabbed by that video game. Okay? Is it excitement or is it their escape from reality? Escape from homework, escape from having friends or no friends. Don't know. But we need to find out. The other thing is that, parents, do we set limits, boundaries for our sons and daughters about time on computer? And do we have that computer in an open area where everyone can see what's going on and not be hidden? Probably the worst place to have a computer, you probably all heard this, is in the bedroom. Don't put it there, right? Put it in an open area where people, as they walk back and forth, can see what's going on. And if they're playing video games, perhaps, it's time to set some boundaries and say, son, daughter, I think we need to set some boundaries. Let's have a covenant, a contract, an understanding, perhaps, that some families have about how much video game time, computer time they're allowed in a week, in a day, that seems fair to all, So it's important. And studies will show that those who are active in video games actually do less well academically. Okay? So it's something you need to be aware of, and we all need to be aware of that. Okay, if they're playing video, what can we replace that time with to do something better? Maybe it's just, let's go play ball together. Let's go play catch together. Let's get out and skate, play hockey, go see a game. What can we do as a family to replace that time? Because if they got too much time in their hand, what are they going to do? For some of them, go in the room, play video games, right? But perhaps we should invite some of their friends over and get to know the friends. And that's a great way, if you're willing to open your house, you'll see what kind of friends they hang out with. And then you'll know what kind of influences there are, right? Invite them here. I'll pay for the ice cream. I'll pay for the drinks. You just bring your friend. Oh, they're good friends. Well done. I will pay more now, all right? Because you want those good friends and that positive influence for the long term. But if they're questionable, then you need to help them understand to choose wisely. You're wiser in what they do because, son, what do you want to do when you get to university, college? Where do you want to be? Oh, this is what you want to be. Well, is what you're doing going to get you there? Or is what you're doing going to hinder you from getting there? What are the requirements? You know what they are. Figure it out. Right? And this is where we need to not tell them necessarily, but teach them to make wise decisions. Let them stumble, fall down, make mistakes. Let them realize, Mom, Dad, you're right. I'm sorry. Boy, that's hard for them. But if they learn it, they'll learn it for life. And that's crucial. It's a life lesson. And those teachable moments, you have to grab them, grip them when they come up, sort of thing. And some of that may be how we are using media ourselves. You know what I'm saying? How are we using media ourselves? Are we an example to our sons and daughters in how we use media, how we limit and boundaries sort of thing? So we need to walk the talk before our sons and daughters walk the talk with us as well. Okay? I hope that's helpful. Okay. Anybody else? Sure.
So how do you support your kids when they're going through emotional up and downs due to relationships? Say, you're supposed to try and have a girlfriend or your daughter or something like that. Mm-hmm. And that relationship really affecting their mood.
Boyfriend, girlfriend, mood, yeah, it'll happen. And one thing we know, when we were in university or college, if we had relationships and they were good relationships, life was so good. But when there's an argument, misunderstanding, life is so terrible. I can't study. I'm thinking about her, him, can't do it. So, the question is, son, daughter, do you really want or need that relationship to get dating at this time? That's the question that they need to really ask. But when they get into it, you know, what's the cause of that emotional high or emotional low? The question is, you know, are we choosing our friends wisely? Are the way we're choosing our boyfriends or girlfriends wisely as well? You know, find people who build us up, not tear us down. Sometimes peer pressure can cause someone to start dating, where they see everybody else dating, and they figure, I better find somebody. This must be something wrong with me. Right? You can't do that. So part of it, depending on their maturity, okay, are they able to sustain and maintain a relationship well? Are they mature enough emotionally, socially, spiritually, to be able to handle the ups and downs of such a relationship? And parents, you know, you have some say in this. You can say, they ask you, Mom and Dad, can I start dating? No. Well, we did that. They don't ask.
It's all underground.
Well, that's the end. And if it's underground, it's even worse. Right? They're trying to hide things from you, Mom and Dad. Right? So how did you find out? It is underground. You know what I'm saying? Then you have to say, son and daughter, what's going on here? You know, you're trying to fool Mom and Dad. Let's talk. Okay? We love you. We want only the best for you. Okay? So what are the reasons why you're going out with this guy or this girl? So, okay? Serious? What's more important to you? And that's where your values start coming together now. Okay? What are their values? Is it the world's values that they are following, or is it God's values? Where are they in their spiritual walk? The Bible teaches us, you know, be the good Samaritan. Treat everyone as you would like to be treated, especially in a relationship. Okay? Don't cross that line, and that's important to understand. So if he or she is getting emotional and getting up and down, then they need to question, is this the kind of relationship you want to continue? Is this something you want to maintain? What's going to happen when you graduate from high school to university? Is that relationship going to still be there? You're going to go here, he's going to go here. What's going to happen to your faith? Think about it. Okay? Now, young people do not think ahead. They don't. They think about next month. Maybe until the end of the school year. That's about it. Right? I want good grades, and that's all I'm doing for. They don't think ahead. But this is part of the maturing process where we as parents need to help them think a bit ahead. a year ahead. Can you think about your future? What's going to happen? Is what you're doing now going to hinder or help what you're trying to achieve after high school? Okay. Now, if you, mom and dad, are not the right person to talk to your son or daughter about this, perhaps another adult would be more effective in talking to her or him about this, okay? About some of this as well. But ultimately, you know, son or daughter, we love you. We have certain beliefs, and we want you to understand where we're coming from. We don't want only the best for you. Could you come and talk to us about it? Be honest with us, and we'll be honest with you. And let's pray about this going forward. Whether that works or not, I don't know, but I think we need to be honest with them. If you're concerned, tell them. If you're hurt, tell them. Because as you demonstrate honesty with them, hopefully they'll be honest with you. And that's the beginning of rebuilding that relationship with them. Anything else? Does that help? Not easy, though. Not easy. What I will say is that, you know, in a church of this size, any size, you have other parents going through the same journey you are in. Find those parents and talk together, okay? The body of Christ is big, okay? Don't think you're doing this all alone. I have the only problem. I don't understand this. My son and daughter's having the only problem. No one else is having the problem. Not true. Everybody's going through the same problem. A lot of them are going through the same problem. Talk to other parents who are like-minded, who believe in Christ. How have they gone through that struggle as well? And ask for advice. What would you do? How would you handle it? Okay? Think about those things. Okay. Sure.
Can you talk more about when the grade 9-year-old daughter, she asked me maybe three times, she said, Mom, when can I have a boyfriend? Mm-hmm. I don't know how to answer this question.
Well, you can ask her. Well, when do you think you're ready for a boyfriend? Ask, that will give you an idea of what she really thinks. Right. Well, how about when I'm grade 10? Oh, another year. Let's wait until then and talk about that. Push away. You know what I'm saying? Or this, I'm ready now. Well, why are you ready now? What makes you think you're ready to date now? You know, are you mature enough to handle a relationship? Are you emotionally, socially, spiritually ready for a boyfriend at this stage? You know how tough it is if it doesn't work out, if it's a breakup. Is that something you want to experience now? Can you think about school, academics, and studies if you are in a relationship? Have you read stories about people who get in a relationship too early and don't do well? Don't know. No. Or you can say, you know, well, daughter, I think I know you fairly well, and I love you, but I don't think you should start dating until you're mature, and probably university. You start there, I don't know. See what she says. See if she fights you. Says, oh, okay, Mom, thanks. Remember, I'm just testing you. Right? You don't know. Right? So think about that. Think about that. I hope that helps. Right? Ask other grade 9s, because for some grade 9s, are they mature enough? Yeah, probably not. Right? And I would say some university not mature enough yet. Yeah. I'll tell you that. And I ask the kids, how many of you go to school, as you know, how many of you know kids who date right now? Oh, good, good. How many of you know kids who don't date? Oh, good. So there's both kinds, right? So don't let peer pressure get you. Decide when you're ready, not when everybody else is ready. Okay? I think our time's up. I think I got to come out. Okay?
No.
Thank you.